Our fifth case for argument today is United States against Kemp. Mr. Smirlinski.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent John D. Kemp. It's my privilege to address this court today on this argument. It's a very simple issue, and it's very straightforward. In essence, what we have here is a case whereby the government is trying to go ahead and justify seizure of a sawed-off shotgun within a boarding room in a house that my client rented from a landlord. What happens, Your Honor, factually in this case, is that you have somebody who shoots himself in the leg.
But just to jump ahead,
absolutely.
And I apologize, but the time is short.
Sure.
Oftentimes with these Fourth Amendment cases, you've got to break the transactions down and figure out why were the police where they were at any given point. And I can get the police in the door of this house without any trouble. They come to the door, they ring the doorbell, the teenager lets them in. And then there's a conversation. And at that point, it seems to me the difficult issue for you is the fact that the district court credits the testimony of the police officers who, as I understand it, among other things, are making an officer safety argument. One of them says he actually takes out his service revolver as he's going, as the teenager's going up the stairs and not responding. Now, I realize that the teenager testified to the contrary, but the district court credits the officers. They don't know at that point if somebody's upstairs. They don't know if this unresponsive teenager is going to do something. Now, I realize they could have tackled him on the stairs or done other things, but this isn't about, you know, figuring out best police procedures.
Sure.
Once they're in the room, they actually get a warrant and they search the room and find the sawed-off shotgun. So I guess at the critical point, which is following the teenager up the stairs, you have to convince us that the district court either shouldn't have credited the officer's testimony, a tough road to hoe, or that there was such a ephemeral risk of to officer safety or other that it's simply incredible.
I think we have both here. Specifically, if you take a look at the testimony of the child, he's 14 years old. We're in a rural community. It's Superior. There's no testimony that was on the record, and I guess I can't argue that in good faith that he knew how to handle guns, but there was no testimony saying that he didn't. The most telling statement in all the transcript was when asked, well, why didn't you go into the room after you helped the man who shot himself? You don't play with guns.
Don't I recall it that the police officer said he didn't know who else was up there when they went up, they indicated the gun?
I don't recall testimony to that effect, Your Honors. Specifically, what I recall is him confronting the boy, David Ennis, who, by the way, was very unconcerned.
Let me read you from essay 7 in your opponent's brief.
Okay.
Sergeant Nowicki testified, at that point I drew my service revolver because I was getting a little nervous about what was going to happen. We got to the top of the stairs. I didn't know if anybody else was there. I didn't know whether he was involved in the shooting. I didn't know it was going other than somebody had supposedly shot in the house.
Your Honor, there is absolutely no evidence that there's anyone in the house.
Well, he says he thought there was somebody in the house. He was nervous about it. And we're talking about is what the trial court credited when he accepted that.
And I'm saying that there's nothing on the record for him to point subjectively to noises in the house or anything that would have led him up that stairs.
Well, he knew there was a gun in the house.
Well, yeah,
yes.
from an objective point of view, he knew that there was or at least had been a gun in the house.
Correct.
He doesn't know, which is true.
True.
And he sees somebody heading in the direction of where he's now just been told the gun was located. He didn't know before he walks in the door whether it was in the living room or upstairs in the second floor or anywhere else. But from an objective point of view, the facts known to him at the time lead him up those stairs. And the question is this a legitimate exigent circumstances situation?
Exactly. As I cited in my brief, under Jenkins and Lenore, those are the district court the cases in the district court that were relied upon. This is factually different from that.
Mm.
There is absolutely no evidence that there's an assault going on, someone's wielding a gun. Not that there's a gun in there.
Now, somebody got shot. Somebody got shot. We know that much.
And he took.
We don't know who's upstairs. We know the kid is running upstairs and won't stop when they tell him to stop.
The child gives the officer an account of who is in the house. Well, so it's who you believe in that junction.
But does the officer have to believe the child's telling him the truth at that moment?
I would argue,
think a little healthy skepticism is part of being a police officer.
I agree. I have a general rule that I don't.
As a police officer.
I don't listen to 14-year-olds under any condition. And then I'm a low suspicious fellow.
Colleagues have more experience with 14-year-olds than I do. I have healthy skepticism anyway.
Yeah.
What is my best reason to go ahead and justify why you should go ahead and reverse? I'll tell you what it is right now. They don't get into the boarder's room. They get in the house. I agree, 100%. You bet. They're there to investigate if there's a gun there. You bet. But there's seven reasons why that's wrong. Because they don't know what kind of gun it is. They don't know if it's loaded. They don't know if the boy is in any danger. They verify that he's not.
Okay, you've now given me three reasons why they should go in.
I think that there are reasons that you should not go in because it doesn't justify.
Those are exigent circumstances you've described.
Pardon me?
Those things you just described are the foundation for exigent circumstances. They don't know who's in the house. They don't know who the gun is. They don't know whether this boy is reliable. All of those things make it absolutely imperative.
There's another barrier, though.
What's that?
It's the renter's room. Because
if it was the renter's room and that was the only issue, we wouldn't have a problem. We're talking about exigent circumstances, and that's the problem.
But what I'm saying is I'm trying to break it down in stages. And what I'm saying to you is it changes once you start going up the stairs. There's another barrier before you get into the renter's room. There's a higher expectation of privacy. You can't just go into the room after all.
That's why they went back and got the warrant.
They couldn't have gotten a warrant because there was no illegal activity. It's not illegal to shoot yourself
or
to have a loaded gun.
Chasing yourself around a flagpole.
The only other thing I wanted to say is, as far as from an investigative standpoint, if the police wanted to see
me,
wasn't it illegal for him to shoot himself? It would not have been illegal if somebody else had shot him.
Oh, I don't know.
How do you shoot yourself without possessing a firearm?
It was an unregistered firearm. So
but he still has to possess
and
the shoe.
It was a shotgun that was found, not the gun that he shot himself with.
Yeah.
But all I'm saying to you is that this was a room, quite simply, where a door could have been closed. He had an expectation of privacy within that rented room. What I'm saying is this falls over the line of a permissible search. I understand the court's concerns with agency.
I understand your point.
But we don't have him here.
I understand your point.
Okay. I'd like to go ahead and reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
You're appointed, weren't you?
Well, certainly,
you
Mr.
were appointed,
Smolensky.
Weren't you?
I was.
Mm.
Thank you.
Ms. Rumbelow.
May it please the court, counsel. Another fact that the officers knew when they were following that teenager up the stairs, the teenager who would not listen to their commands to stop, is at the hospital, the defendant said he dropped the gun and the gun accidentally discharged and shot him. But the officer at the scene had told Sergeant Nowicki, but the wound made it inconsistent. The type of wound he had was inconsistent with the defendant's version of what happened. So I agree with the court wholeheartedly that asking the officers to completely believe this 14-year-old and what happened, that's asking a lot of the officers, knowing that somebody had been shot, there was a gun in the house, a loaded weapon, and at the hospital, the defendant had also been uncooperative. So when you look at the totality of the circumstances in this case,
he was uncooperative in the sense I thought he was sort of incoherent. Is that?
No, he was uncooperative.
He's also uncooperative.
Yes.
Incoherently uncooperative, which is
they describe
double
it.
In spades.
Yeah. In the record, it's reflected that he was in a lot of pain, but also uncooperative. So when you consider the fact that the defendant's uncooperative, his version of the event...
It's hard to understand why you would want to be uncooperative with people in a hospital emergency room.
I've never been in a hospital emergency room.
You're kidding.
But no.
She doesn't say to him, until you cooperate, just sit there.
You know, she doesn't have any 14-year-old
kids
either.
That's
right.
Clearly no 14-year-olds.
Right.
Yes. Everything that the police knew... it was absolutely proper for them to follow the teenager up the stairs. He would not listen to their commands to stop. On page 18 of the transcript from the evidentiary hearing, Sergeant Nowicki testified that he drew his service weapon because he just didn't know if anybody else was there.
I just read that to him.
Right. He just didn't know if anybody was involved
right.
in the shooting.
But it seems to me this case really does focus around, if there are exigent circumstances, it focuses around an officer safety rationale, because with the 14-year-old standing right in front of them, they know the 14-year-old is fine. It's not that they think he is lying there bleeding because somebody shot him or anything. They're worried about, or at least so they say in the excerpt that Judge Bauer called counsel's attention to, who else is up there? Could there be somebody else? There's something bad going on in this house, or could be.
That's correct. They also were speculative as, could the teenager have been the shooter? They just didn't know. If you look at the entire record of the evidentiary hearing,
again, that's an officer safety rationale.
It is.
That's not a teenager safety rationale. It's an officer safety.
It is for the safety of not only the teenager in case anybody else was up there, but if the teenager had been involved in something and had been involved in the shooting, it's also the safety of the officers. So this was justified under exigent circumstances, both on grounds of the safety of the officers as well as anybody else who may have been upstairs. So I ask that the court affirm the judgment and conviction of the district court.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Smirlinski?
Yes, just briefly.
I think it's inappropriate to say that Mr. Kemp was uncooperative after he shot himself. I think he was in a lot of pain, and for that reason, he wasn't very good at relaying information, and he did also tell the officer that he was concerned because there was a boy in the house. The officers went to the house. They checked the safety of the boy. The boy told them no one else was there. Hence, I believe that the search was unreasonable. They have to abide by the Fourth Amendment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Smirlinski. And counsel, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been both to your client and to us. The case is taken under advisement.